Hey everybody, welcome back to this. I'm your host, Shauna Griffiths. And as always, we're having a real talk with a real leader. And we're breaking down hot topics to help take your game to the next level. Today's guest has been a long time coming. I have been after her for a while, probably since we first met, to come on the show, and I finally twisted her arm. And our topic, based on her extensive career, is breaking down strategic growth planning and leveraging insights to drive a competitive advantage. So our guest is Dr. Heather Maxwell. She's a revenue generator fueled by insights and strategy. And I am proud and honored to say she is a first draft class leadership athlete. So without further babble from my side, Heather, welcome.
Thank you, Shauna. It's great to join you. And you're right. It was me. I was the hang up. I was a little nervous about doing my first podcast, but we're here.
We are here. We are here, and you're going to kill it. And I'm honestly so grateful. Folks, I always tell you how I know my guest, and Heather has truly become a dear friend to me. We met on LinkedIn, technically. I kept seeing her posts, and I was seeing we had so many people in common. And I don't know who reached out to who, but I think just right off the bat, we just felt such, camaraderie. And Heather, you've been an amazing support and friend as we're both kind of doing our thing. So folks, that's how I know Heather. So if you think that LinkedIn is just about people hawking, their latest their latest career ambitions and or birthdays and things like that, there is true magic in relationships to be had.
So true, Shauna. So true.
So Heather, from what I know about you, you have over 15 years of experience with, marquee brands, Notre Dame Athletics, which I see that sign behind you, and you're the logo behind you, General Mills, Conagra, Sazerac. You juggle two big roles. One is as fractional EVP in insights and strategy for a company called Iris. And you are also forging your own path as founder of a venture called Next 5 Team. And so you're doing it all really with insights being part of what's driven your career. So talk to us about that. And what's been the thing about insights that's been so compelling for you?
Sure. Yeah. For me, it's always about insights. Whenever we start a project or back up and even think about the business, what's going on with the business, where are we and where are we trying to go? I always think about that in terms of, what's our knowledge gap? So what's going on? Where do we want to go? What do we know? But what do we not know? What's left? That knowledge gap is so important when I think about closing it to then create a strategy to win. We always, I guess there's a lot of bias towards action, go, go, go.
Yeah, yeah.
Just go fast. Might not even be the right direction, but look, I went. And there's a part of me that goes, yeah, let's just take a pause. Let's take a quick beat, take a little bit of an account of what do we know that's going on? What's going on with us? What's going on with our consumer, our customers, and even our competition, of course, creates that landscape. And if we just don't take a pause and have a true, I would say an honest audit, right, of what's really going on, how do we know how to get where we want to go? What strategy will get us there? So to me, it's always been about insights. A lot of times we can look at sales information and know the what, quite a bit about the what. But the insight part is really built into that why. Why is it happening? Why are the market dynamics like this? Why is the share like this? Why is our turn and frequency like this? All of those questions are answered more with the why. And that's important to me. And that's really the crux of insights, period.
Yeah. And did this just come to you as you were in undergrad? Was it a job you had? I've actually never asked you this question before, but I'm curious, where did that become something that really hooked you?
That's a really great question. I think maybe at an early age, my parents are complete opposites. So My dad is a save guy. He has a really appreciate brands in a few categories, like tools, cars, and I would say technology. So like TVs and things. And my mom is always like, she's such a consumer. She loves to buy things, and she's about brands for clothing, hair care, but everybody has areas that they will, you know, level up, that they insist on a brand.
Right.
And I always wondered why, because, you know, even if you look at something as simple as an apple, right? Like, what brands are apples? But people have preferences for types. And so
I'm picky with my apples, right? Girl.
So all along, it's like, I'm a pink lady. I'm a pink lady.
I've been, for a while, I was a Braeburn. I can't think of the one. There's one that, anyway, it's kind of like a Gala, but it's not a Gala apple. That's how specific it is. Anyway, yeah.
Honeycrisp, you keep going. Yeah. You know, and you can even get into the Starbucks conversation. But anyway, the meaning and what the brand stands for, and why people associate themselves with brands, insist on brands. And then in other categories, have no issue. Like, I really think my dad's been wearing the same pair of jeans for maybe 40 years now. And my mom would never do that. So it's that difference between people, not consumers. We say consumers all the time, but between people and what are their needs? What progress are they seeking? What are they trying to achieve? And it might be really a feeling. It could be functional. It's all of these things. That really just intrigued me from a young age. And then I went on my undergrads actually in marketing just to try to understand more about understanding people's needs and then creating the perfect proposition, messaging, and then having that conversion to motivate them into actually purchasing.
Right. I think that there's a lot of times when this part that we're talking about right now does get skipped over. To your point, it just goes right into the implement, the tactics of things, these ideas. And I was actually laughing when you were talking about it earlier, because admittedly, in my career, I actually needed to learn to step back to have that layer of data, insight, strategy, because I would get so excited about the new idea and go into like, oh, and this is how we can get it done. And so I think, so I'm curious, why do you think it happens that it gets skipped over like that? I know for me, I just didn't really learn to flex that muscle. and then I had to learn it. Honestly, I was told too many times, nope, you're going right to tactics. I was like, damn it.
You're right, y'all. Well, I think there is this piece where there is a moment where maybe you have an experience where some kind of insight actually helped you refine and strengthen your strategy. And and when that happens, it's a pivot point for most people where they will take a little bit more of an audit to go, do we know enough? Now, the dark side of that is there are some people that just get that paralysis by analysis, right? Like they will never have enough information to make the decision and feel good. Mm-hmm. That's the other extreme. So not doing enough, you know, doing too much, and then we end up missing opportunities. So it is somewhere in between having that good insights partner to work with, because no one wants to be an idea killer.
Right.
No one. Well, but we want to be an idea builder, a partner in that, and a refiner, and a, that's a fantastic idea. Okay, how can we best bring it to life? And I think that's the piece where it's really more about optimization in the proposition. You think about food. I mean, we've done so much work on, you know, flavors. What are the right launch flavors? How can the package stand out at shelf so someone understands it belongs in the category and stands out enough that they might want to try it? You know, is it the right package configuration? You know, does it work for Costco? Does it work in a multi-pack? Like, there's so many things to consider to meet a consumer's needs. So when you really partner together and leverage everyone's expertise, so that would be insights, R&D, marketing, keep going, sales. That's where the magic really happens. And I think there's a great checks and balances in good teams where you kind of keep everybody honest, where you hold hands and you go, okay, do we have enough information to make this decision the best we can at that point in time? And you're like, yeah, let's do it. Or yeah, I just would like a little bit more confidence in this area. It may be custom research. It might not. It might be just another secondary data point. But I think it's, you know, a little bit of that finding the sweet spot on how much is enough.
Yeah, I think it makes a lot of sense. And the way you're talking about how you can formulate a team, I loved when you talked about the checks and balances, because when you do have it, like the right energies at the table, the right people at the table, yeah, then you can avoid someone just rabbit holing in, you know, that they can't get out of that loop of, to your point, that analysis paralysis, and everybody else is like, but we got to get it out the door. So again, with the right mix, you can really be a great balance for each other.
Right. And well, and here's one thing. Think about the alternative. If you don't have time right now to get it at least optimized a bit, how are you going to find time to mend that relationship with Walmart because you sold this and it's not selling? Or when will you find time to write the postmortem for leadership when they come knocking going, we didn't quite get the results we forecasted, right? And now we have a hole in our P&L.
Yeah.
So I guess sometimes it's making that decision on, well, when do we want to spend that time? Because, you know, you're right. You may throw some things at the wall and we may have enough and you get the decision right and you don't have those negative fallouts. But, you know, we know the hit rate on innovation is tough, right? Or everybody would be winning.
Yeah, exactly. It's such a good point, though, because I think that can be a common thing that people push against, you know, the work and insights and strategy. And because it's like, well, we don't have time for that. We got to get it out the door. But you're, you know, it's like when I just am usually a bit flabbergasted when it's like people bring, you know, new startup products to market without doing, you know, proper research, without having, you know, a test case in the market, those type of things. So, but it's, I'm so glad you pointed that out, because at some point, that's going to bite you in the ass. At some point, so you have to make the time. And it's also like, if you don't make the time, then what are the consequences?
Right, right. Well, and what you're saying too, you know, proof of concept. So proof of concept, you know, learn, iterate. You don't have to go all the way in right away. There's a lot of different ways to learn. You can do regional launches. We did quite a bit. You could do a test night, you know, when we're talking about athletics, like, there's not a whole lot of harm in that if you test a superhero night and realize, oh, maybe we could have brought that to life in a lot better ways. We kind of fell flat. That's still in the test and learn optimized space. So no matter the industry, there is flexibility in the marketplace. And spoiler alert, your consumers know when you haven't done your homework. Because have you ever watched a commercial or seen a product and thought, oh, wow, I guess that's not for me? And maybe you weren't the target audience, but sometimes you look at those products or that work and you go, I'm pretty sure I'm the target audience. And that was just a real big swing and a miss.
Totally.
They know. We know.
They know. Yeah, we're
consumers.
So true. We're like, I can see you trying, but oof, that was bad. It actually reminds me of something where I heard of like a knife company that came out with a women's knife, air quotes, women's knife, folks who are listening to this, that was pink. The handle was pink. And you're like, what?
They shrink it and pink it and call it women's? Come on, Shauna.
I know, it sounds so ridiculous, but again, there are brands that were like sort of late, you know, coming to the table of like, how do you actually create a product for women? But you have them doing that. And you're like, oh yeah, oof, bad.
Yeah. I mean, it was like the NFL when they figured out that not all women's fans watching the NFL wanted to wear a pink jersey that was bedazzled. I mean, that was a breakthrough, right? And sales have increased.
Yeah. Right. Totally. So walk us through, and you could either, I know, like I said, you have two roles right now.
Right.
So in your roles, like, what are you actually doing on a daily basis or a weekly basis or whatever the time frame, you know, for this critical strategic planning? And really, as you know, as we talked about earlier, breaking down the hot topic is around like leveraging that for a competitive advantage. Like, what are you doing in your daily to do that? So that the audience gets an understanding of how you work and perhaps even how to tap into you as a resource.
Sure. So IRIS Research and Strategy this company is really focused on qualitative, so deep work with consumers. And we're working with startup all the way to Fortune 500 giant companies. And it's really helping these companies in their planning process. They've identified that knowledge gap. They've identified a shift with their consumers. They're not quite sure what it is. And they really want to go listen and talk with consumers and have a dialogue. Sometimes we're going in home with the consumer. Sometimes it's an online interview like right now. Sometimes it's a triad or maybe two or three people. But it's a live exchange where we're learning about them. It could be a number of topics. Sometimes it's, you know, what does snacking look like in your household right now? And they will walk us through. We'll go into their cupboard. We're talking about like snacks that were in, snacks that were out because snacks had rotated through their house. But we're really trying to figure out, you know, where do snacks fit into their life? And what are they trying to accomplish? You know, yeah. I'm trying to have that salty, good flavor, but I don't want to really feel bad serving it to my kid or myself. Oh, okay. Well, what snacks, you know, hit the mark? Do any hit the mark for you right now? And we'll just have conversation. But what that allows them to do is think about why their share is the way it is, why they're attracting the consumers they are, who do they want to attract, and what do they think about snacks? So it's really, they have a base of learning and understanding quantitatively, but they don't understand the whys. And there's that gap to making their plan. So that's one example. But Iris is really focused on qualitative. Could be in store. We've done quite a bit of shop alongs too, like how are people shopping? Maybe the entire store or maybe a category. We did a deli meat project, the deli cheese project a bit ago. And, you know, there's so much learning and observing and then also kind of unpacking what they're doing and what motivated them to do that or what they didn't do. So great immersion learning. And that's a lot of how Iris is working on strategy building. Within Next 5 team, you know, we're working with athletic departments and trying to get that upfront audit. You know, let's just focus on basketball. How many tickets right now are you selling for men's basketball, women's basketball? What's the breakdown last year of season ticket holders? You know, that's the largest investment. Mini packs, maybe it's 3-4 games. Group ticket sales, single game ticket sales. Like, what does that mix look like? Students, et cetera. Okay, so that was, you know, you were at this mark. What's your revenue goal and your attendance goal for this year? You know, and there should be a gap. We should be growing. So, okay, where is that growth going to come from? Okay, let's unpack why we think people come to games and who are coming to games. Because once we can get into that psychological framework, right, of those fans, we can understand how to attract more, and we can also understand how to optimize that experience, and we can also move people along that continuum. So maybe they came as a group ticket, you know, experience, which typically someone invites you. It's typically a discounted ticket. And then we want to move them up to them going, hey, fam, do you guys want to go to a game? Now we're in single game ticket status. Moving up to mini pack and season, that's a different level of investment and engagement. But we want to move people along that continuum. But we need to understand why they're coming and also why people aren't coming.
Yeah.
In order to attract more fans. And look, the more fans that we can get aware and then moving down that funnel, considering coming and then converting into a ticket sale, and then they have a great experience, they amplify it back into the marketplace. And it just is this cycle that keeps giving, right? We call it the flywheel. It's really hard to start at first.
Yeah.
Not a lot of momentum. It's hard. But once it gets going, that momentum is amazing. And at first, you may need to manufacture a little bit of that momentum. And that's really what we're helping a number of schools do right now is take a look. Where are we? Where do we want to go? How are we going to get there? Using the data that they have in their ticketing systems, using their institutional knowledge. A lot of folks have been at school for a bit. And then there's a number of folks that tend to have higher turnover, some of those more entry-level positions. How do we leverage all of that institutional knowledge plus new ways of thinking from corporate America that we're bringing, you know, meshing kind of the best of the best together to then get to a different outcome? Because that's all we want, right? Everybody wants growth. You just have to be willing to think about it in a slightly different way to maybe accelerate that growth.
Yeah, absolutely. As you're talking about it, I was like having flashbacks to my days, my many days in the NBA family working in marketing, where, you know, it's so true. And as you talked about it, it's not just that you're peddling these tickets. It's also like the thing that keeps them coming back, the thing that brings them into that wormhole. And then they're buying merch and then they're buying concessions and all that is the fan experience. Is that, you know, and that experience, which I actually want to hear you tell the audience, like what you see the experience to be. But as I was taught to learn back in the day, the experience is everything from their experience buying the ticket to the moment they get like their drive into the parking lot to in the arena and, you know, and so forth. But this is actually one of the things that I love about your LinkedIn posts is that, by the way, folks, she has awesome LinkedIn content and the community that you're building is so awesome. It's so fun to see your community members engaging with each other now. And it's really, it's, you've evolved it so much. It's so awesome. But you talk a lot about the consumer experience. Mm-hmm. Be it in sports, be it in, you know, in the other side of businesses, corporate America that you dive into. So if we can kind of transition to a little of that, I would love to, for, you know, to talk to, you know, us about what are the elements of experience that are so crucial.
Yeah, the ones that we're focusing on, you're correct. It's really from the beginning until they get home. But the beginning can often be that first exposure to the brand. So we can do a hypothetical, you know, it may have been watching a game on TV. So let's just say it was Michigan versus Ohio State. Okay. I picked
Ooh,
that.
Ohio State.
I know. I thought you might boo. But that, I mean, that's a pretty big game. We could do like Michigan versus Central Michigan. Let's do one that is not such a blockbuster and we're going to have to work, right, to sell the tickets here. So to me, maybe you saw a game of Michigan basketball at some point and you thought, well, maybe that, does that look fun? Well, what looks fun on TV? Probably people in the stands, probably the cheerleaders, the band, the players, you know, the on court being entertaining, but like you're looking at the full atmosphere there. And this is a place where we get really caught up in digital eyeballs and streams and clicks. I get it. We need that too. I think we learned from COVID, no one wants to see empty seats in COVID, like cardboard cutouts in the stands, right? I took you back to like a bad flashback there.
Totally. Lots of empty seats.
That, no. Right? Like we don't want to watch that. The players don't want that. The coaches don't want that. Our revenue, our bottom line does not want that. Mm-hmm. So that could be an entry point. Another entry point could be right now, you know, we're running meta campaigns for some schools. And I'm seeing meta campaigns come through. You know, some campaigns I look at and it's just a person standing there with the ball. I might be aware, but I'm not sure that I'm really considering or being motivated now because it just doesn't look very exciting. You know, where's the energy or is there something else going on at the game? Is it Lego night? Is there something extra that I can say to the kids? Hey, you guys, we're going to the game and it's also Lego night. Like, so what's that first impression? We'll just call it the first impression. And then to your point, now my experience is when I bought my ticket, how easy and seamless was it? When I got to the arena, was it easy to get there? Could I find parking? Did I have to pay for parking? Was that annoying? Was it tough to find parking? I parked my car and went through the doors. I'm scanning my ticket. When I'm scanning my ticket, are people welcoming me? How do I feel when I walk through the threshold of that arena? What do I hear? What do I smell? I mean, love to hear the band or the music. Love to smell the popcorn being made. I can take you there now. Love to have someone say, welcome to Michigan. Like, great. Did they check my bag? Did I feel like a criminal? Or were they just really just making sure everybody was safe? Right. There's different ways to do that. You know, I walk in, was the line to the bathroom wrapped around the corner? And I thought, I don't know, maybe at halftime. When I look at
signage, is there any signage?
Can I see? Did someone help me? Did someone see I was confused and go, can I help you, ma'am? That's part of the experience. You know, concessions, does everything look like maybe something I could get at a convenience store? Or did I see maybe a Black M pretzel? Cool. Okay. Now we're getting into things that really, we're walking into the arena. Can I find my seat? Am I entertained? How do I feel? So much of an experience is how we feel. And I think sometimes we get so functional, we forget about the feeling part. And really all of that experience as I'm working with teams is, where are the points where we're making memories? Mm-hmm. Because we are in the business of making memories. Because otherwise you're just another place to spend quite a bit of money, yeah, not as convenient as my couch, and more expensive than maybe spending 2 hours at a movie theater, although the prices, they're catching up, you know, or going to a trampoline park or going out to eat for the night. I mean, there's a lot of ways to spend 2 hours in the winter besides going to Michigan for a basketball game.
Yeah. It's so, everything you said is so true. And again, I really was thinking back to my days when I was working at the Nets. And then, you know, when I, nowadays, when I go to a game, it's, you and I have talked about this on our dog walk conversations. It's so hard for me to just actually watch the game because I'm noticing all the things that we just talked about, because that's where, you know, again, I was trained to try to pull all those pieces of the puzzle together to create an a complete experience. So I tend to be a little bit of a harsh critic, I think, at times.
Yeah.
But it's really important, you know, and I'm so glad we're talking about it, because the other thing is, we're talked about it in the basketball sense and, you know, sport, because I think it's such an easy thing to relate to. But it's also like people in this audience who are listening now, like you have this experience when you walk into the grocery store, when you walk into the department store. You did a post, I think, on Dick's Sporting Goods and like the trying on shoes section on LinkedIn. And it just sticks out to me as like, you know, the people who are working for the retailer, that needs to be ingrained into all of who are working there. And to your point, a customer knows right away. They know, do I want to keep coming back? What story am I going to tell about my experience that I was there? Yeah. And as we both know, people talk more about the bad experiences than they have the good experience. And it doesn't have to be a colossal bad experience. It can be just, you know, sometimes it's the small things that they seem small, but they're big in the impression they make.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, you could catch some, you could just kind of irk somebody at the wrong point in time and it could blow up on social, right? You know, the Dick's example is a great example of integration of insights. You know, everybody knows going to try on shoes is a pain. It's a pain. Where's the person? Do you have my size? Back and forth, carrying the boxes. Oh, one fell off. Shoes all over the place. Like, what's that little weird pantyhose footy? Darn it. Why'd I wear flip-flops in here when I was going to try on shoes? Like all of the things, right? And Dick's did some work, you can tell. And they're like, okay, we know these pain points exist. Why is nobody addressing this other than online shopping, which by the way, is super expensive for companies to send you three or four pairs of shoes for you to mail back two or three. It's very expensive. So they're like, okay, hey, this could be a really nice in-person experience. And they integrated technology. I could walk up and say, I need this size, you know, this shoe. And then somebody comes out and is like, hey, hi. Oh, Heather in the black shirt. Yep. Okay, here's your shoes. And so you're still getting that experience of working with a human, but it's much more streamlined. And it was just much more efficient, in my opinion. I ended up buying an extra pair of shoes, which, there you go, right? You're adding to the basket. You're increasing your sales because you had a great experience.
Yeah, absolutely. So we've talked about some different examples, obviously in sports and retail. You gave us some kind of sneak peeks to even like the food side, the snacks that we talked about. Are there some like marketplace trends and then that you could share with us and any insights that you gather from seeing those? And I'll stop there. Are there any ones that you can share with us? Then I'll get back to the other thing.
I will say one trend that, you know, this is not proprietary. I can't share anything like that. But one trend that we know in our world that we have so much access to everyone all the time, but there is a huge human deep-seated need for connection. And it's not something that you can talk to someone and they'll sit there and go, oh yeah, I'm just lonely, or I just don't feel really connected to anyone. You can't get to this learning with just a basic survey or observing. It's some of the deeper qual work we've done. It's some of the work, frankly, for Next 5 team when we talk to fans about, you know, the importance of going to games live. What is it? And the way that they'll explain it, and I just use this learning with everyone because it is so universal. You know, for many, going to sporting events, it is a religious experience. You know, that's their church. That's, they go in and the people around them know them. And there's rituals, right? You wear your colors, you wear that favorite jersey, that lucky hat. There's a lot of similarities between maybe a church or a bowling league or your local pub. I mean, you name it, wherever you have community, people that know you. You know, Cheers was on to something, right? Where everybody knows your name.
Yeah.
We don't have that many opportunities like we did. We really live fragmented lives in a time when we're so connected, but there's not that connectivity. So I would say, you know, having meaningful in-person experiences, whether it's a business like what we just said about Dick's, whether it's sporting events, is so important to bring people together in a way that just makes them feel good. You know, makes them have an experience they want to come back and have again, and that they want to share with somebody.
Yeah. I'm so glad you're, you know, we're having this part of the conversation, because it actually goes back to what I was going to blurt out at the same time. is related to, is this a bit of the like post-COVID phenomenon? Is it that like people have realized that they valued this more than they knew? Or, and I don't even know if you know this answer, but you know, is it like, maybe it's just become more salient to companies that like, oh gosh, now we're all seeing that people value that more than maybe it's the companies. Cause maybe, I don't know if people realize they even valued it as much as they do. It's an interesting awakening moment, I think.
I agree. And I don't know. I don't have a definitive answer on that. I think we were heading that way before COVID just because of how busy and overscheduled our lives were and still remain to an extent. And then you have COVID where it just time stopped and you were stuck. I mean, we were navigating, swimming through this new world. And then there was a reassessing, you know, of actually how we spend time and what was important. And I think we're still collectively working our way out of that. And I think some people have had trouble getting going again outside of COVID, just to remember how good it is to connect in person. And let me be clear, this is not a return to office commercial. It's not. To me, it's about purposeful connection, not check the box connection. And when you have that, especially with a team, it's magical. I mean, it is truly magical. The support and the building, the ideas and execution that can come from it, unmatched. Uh-oh, I can't hear you.
Oh, sorry.
There I can.
Yep, there I can, because I had the mute button on, folks. Watch your mute button.
It was a great question.
Yeah, it was. No, what I was starting to say is, like, as you were talking, I'm thinking about my own experience having too much tech coming at me. Mm. And it's like, I'm on the computer, I'm on the phone. When I want to buy something, when I want to, I don't know, call State Farm for my insurance, I want to speak to a live person. That is my experience that I am looking for. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, I was like, you know, I told you, like, I wish my bucket list thing would be to go to a South Carolina women's basketball game. Like, they're so amazing. You know, but it's like, I watched them on TV, but it is just different in person to be able to feel that, the sound of the sneakers on the court, all of that, so much different. And I was actually watching an Indiana Fever game the other day, and Caitlin Clark was, as usual, lighting it up. And the announcers were talking about how there's such a different feeling in the building when she's on fire, which of course, but again, it's just, it adds to that experience that they're having. So, and sometimes you can't control the, you know, the product on the court. We had that at the Nets.
Yeah.
That was bad.
Yeah. It's,
you can't control it. So you have to manufacture it.
There's something, you know, back to the making memories, right? You may have memories laying on the couch with, like, I have memories laying on the couch on Sunday afternoons watching the Vikings with my dad.
Yeah.
Those are core memories in a different way. You know, those real memorable moments, those are often in person. And even to this day, you know, so we would take our daughter back to Notre Dame women's basketball games, and she met the players after the game, autograph signing. You know, she heard the band. She watched Coach McGraw walk out and wave to the crowd. All these things that now, when we watch on TV, she's experiencing that game differently because she's been there in person. So it's almost like once you've been there, it changes your engagement and your understanding of that environment for the rest of your life. Mm-hmm. It's just different. And those are different memories. You know, looking back at photos with, you know, Breonna Turner, and you have, you know, a 6'3" woman standing next to this little 3-year-old, you know, and now for her to be able to go see her play for the Sky, you know, and it's incredible. But those kinds of memories aren't made from your couch watching on TV. They're made in person.
Yeah, absolutely. So when you were, I don't know if you can actually say the schools that you're working with or have worked with, but can you give the audience an idea of like what level the schools are at? And again, this is just me thinking, I have a lot of people in the sports arena in my audience. And so sure. I'm curious if you could share a little bit more about the type of schools that you work with.
Sure. So currently we've worked with mid-major schools, and a lot of them are lean on people. Mm-hmm. They're lean on budgets. And so we're really helping as an extension of their team, trying to infuse this approach that then allows them to get more return on, you know, that hour they spent planning or that dollar they spent planning. And that part's been really successful. We've had some recent inquiries with large high schools, which was a little unexpected to me, but I mean, hey, football in Texas and basketball in Indiana, those are big deals. And so I should have expected that, but that's been a whole different channel. And then also with a couple large basketball clubs. So one in California and one in Illinois, it's the same piece. Like, they want to create this experience that creates memories, that creates this legacy of people wanting to bring their friends to come back, and create really traditions. You know, traditions are hard to create. You have to be kind of purposeful about them. Some just happen, but others, you know, you can work to create different traditions. And that's what we're working with. So primarily leaner groups. We've had a couple chats with some bigger P4 schools, and a lot of times, like, they have their resources, but right now it's trying to crack the code with them on working together. Like, we're just trying to bring a different way of thinking, and you guys have all of the legacy learning and you have the data. Like, let's use the power of we to really unlock growth there. So we're cracking that code now.
Yeah. Early you were talking about how part of, because of your experience that you bring to the table, actually helping to see through the lens, like at fans, at audience members, through the lens of actually consumers, not just fans. So you bring another layer, I think, of information, of insights to it, which I think is, it really stood out to me when you said it earlier. So I wanted to sort of put an exclamation on it now for the audience. But so we have been talking quite a bit about sports. And I said earlier that you are a leadership and athlete. So the combination there is your mindset. And, you know, Heather, I've watched you as you've been working, building your business, your resilience, your coachability, your curiosity. You talked about some of your curiosity, you know, earlier. I remember the day you sent me something about Canva and you were so excited about it. And I was like, I was so impressed with that, you know? And so, you know, I'm curious if, where did that, do you know where that kind of came from, that mindset that you have, the way you approach your work? Is it something that you were taught or that you learned on your own? Like, was it self-taught or did you learn it from like mentors and things like that? Or maybe a combination?
I think it's a combination. You know what? It always irks me when people think that they're self-made.
Oh.
Like, no one is self-made. It's who you are and how you lead is curated. And it's whether it's like conscious or subconsciously, you know, you being impacted by leaders around you, for better or for worse, frankly, you may replicate behavior that's incredibly toxic, or you may be a phenomenal leader, again, because you're replicating something that you've seen. So I think I've been fortunate. You know, my dad and my mom, I go back to them. My dad works so hard, and he worked hard to show me work ethic. Like, you got to put the work ethic, you got to put the work in, but also accountability, and accountability to others, but also accountability to yourself. Like,
oh yeah.
If, you know, you're going to walk the walk, right? You gotta do it. And it was funny because it was so functional, but so gritty is my dad. He's very blue collar and was just like, he was going to get it done. And people followed him. They knew that he was fair, but they knew he was tough. And that was the same way he parented.
Yeah.
Really. And then it was funny because my mom on the other end was like, well, work can be fun. And so I have a lot of that in me too. Like, it doesn't have to be functional. Like, how can we make this fun? And so I'm always seeking to insert that. But, you know, I had a high school coach, Coach Walters. He was my track coach. And he was the first one that brought to me, you know, literature on like the psychology of running and racing.
Oh, wow.
And it was in high school. And I remember going, what? Like, beyond just training my body, we can like mentally train. This is fantastic. Yeah. And then, you know, probably a big pivot point too was Coach McGraw. Her attention to detail and how hard she would work and also hold people accountable, but fairly, it just made you want to do more. So to be a leader and have people want to do more, I just found that so motivating.
Yeah, absolutely. And I assume that's, we talked a bit about how you've led yourself, but I assume that's part of like how you've worked to lead others, whether that's leading your clients, leading teammates. It sounds like you probably weave that into how you lead others as well.
Yeah, it's all about continuous improvement for me. You know, how do we just continue to get better? And in growth mindset, you know, all the things, right? Like we can do anything really that we set our mind to, but we have to go seek the resources. We have to seek the insights. We have to build a plan. You know, hope is not a strategy. So how do we piece these pieces together, you know, to get to where we want to go? And I think just sports does such a great job of that. And I know, you know, with you playing college basketball too, Shauna, it's this sense of it's always we over me. We can always achieve more than I can. Yeah. And if that equation's out of whack, then like we really have something else to fix. So it's all about always about the team.
Yeah, absolutely. And I swear, for people who are listening, like one thing I can tell you is that if you can have a team person who becomes like a support part of your support team, this is go back to what I said earlier, Heather, it's been such a, I have benefited so much from your approach to the way that you run your own life and you self-regulate. And I learn from you all the time. And, you know, I feel like we're sort of a team in supporting each other. And so I think, you know, we've talked about a lot of things here today. I hope everybody's taken, you know, a lot of great information from it. One of the things that I say is, again, like, if you can have a person who can be a team member of your support team, you know, who brings half as much as you do to the table, Heather, then I think people will be pretty lucky. So I want to thank you so much for coming today, finally, to coming on the show, sharing all that you had. Folks, if you want to get in touch with Heather, like I said, follow her on LinkedIn. Her posts are awesome. And so I'm just going to turn it back to you for two questions as we close it out, which are related to takeaways.
Okay.
So first is, again, we did cover a lot of things. So what do you want to make sure the audience takes away from the, you know, insights and competitive advantage side of things?
Yeah, I think the biggest piece is recognizing that power of learning. It doesn't have to take a long time. It doesn't have to be expensive. And the rewards can be, I mean, just amplified, you know, amplifying anything that you would do. So don't be afraid of that. And also, you know, keep trying new ways, like build from your foundation of where you are, but don't be afraid to reach out to peers, whether it's LinkedIn or in your network, reaching out and working with consultants like myself. Like, look, some things you're going to look at and go, wow, I never thought of it that way. And it may unlock so much growth for you. And some of it you may look and go, yeah, we're doing part of that. And that can be very validating. So don't be afraid of the learning and then the building with others that influence there, I think can be really powerful.
Yeah, absolutely. Really well said. And then we're going to close it with the leadership athlete side of things. So it's from a leadership standpoint, what takeaways do you want to make sure the audience has about the way of the leadership athlete?
Yeah, I think the whole working hard is so important, but working smart. And I think that's why, Shauna, when we talked about Canva, I was so excited because I had all these ideas locked in my head for a while, but then Canva allowed, I am not a paid spokesperson for Canva. But it really helped me scale so many things. And along with the AI portion of it, it was fantastic. And I think having that consistency, just always showing up, you know, and your 100% on one day might not be really 100% the next day, but that's your 100% for that day. So you have to just keep going and keep making those deposits, whether it's learning, whether it's relationships. You know, I love our friendship. I love how we, you know, can just bounce things off of one another or celebrate wins or, you know, kind of put a pin in a down day and go, well, that one's over. We're moving on. Because that's part of that consistency and continuing just to show up. And, you know, I think that showing up for one another, sometimes as leaders, I think we have to have all the answers. We don't, you know, we have to be able to look at the information and help make decisions and remove barriers. But I think just showing up and being there for one another is such an important piece to that authenticity that we always talk about that can be overlooked. But that's the piece that really drives trust. And we know that trust allows teams to work well and outperform teams that don't have trust. So, you know, leadership is funny. I love it. Everybody needs a leader. And leaders can really take the team to higher heights. But you still have to have respect for one another and really understand the value of the team. And I think that's what really great leaders do.
Yeah, absolutely. And as you said, there's an element of self-regulate and self-lead first. When you can do that, then you have that power to be able to lead others, you know, much more effectively. So thank you for coming on, for your example of leadership and all that you're doing. And folks, we hope that you enjoyed, as I said, and have an awesome day. Thank you.
Thank you.